You'll be hearing from our union about that.
Random, Ruby, and Storm lapped breathlessly together as they ran with the rejects, plunging down narrow tunnels and away from the pursuing wolf forces. The assault had gone exactly as planned, with minimum casualties on their side and maximum death and embarrassment to the wolves in the church. A clone working in the factory complex had provided them with the exact timing necessary to be sure of camera coverage. Now the rejects ran back through the new tunnels and on into older established parts, keeping up a good pace for all their tiredness. The explosive sealed openings wouldn't hold the wolf troops back for long. They weren't supposed to. The battle wasn't over yet. Down below, in the darkness and familiar confines of the rebel underworld, the rejects would teach a final deadly lesson to their enemies. The tunnels sloped steeply downward for some time, and then opened up suddenly into a vast cavern. Random lurched to a halt, as the path before him split apart to form a number of even narrower trails leading down and along the sides of the cavern. The vast open space was dizzyingly huge, as though someone had hollowed out the inside of a mountain. The ceiling was hundreds of feet above, and the cavern floor seemed as far below. Random stood very still, staring about him, as rebels jostled to get past him, running confidently down along the narrow trails. The walls were mostly smooth, polished by who knew how many centuries of running water and other abrasives. There were bright streaks of metallic blues and greens and golds, harsh traceries of long-forgotten industries. Light from the rebels' lanterns glistened brightly on metal stalactites and stalagmites, hanging ponderously from the ceiling or jutting up from the curling yellow mists that hid the cavern floor. Ruby and Storm were at Random's side, quietly urging him forward, but he couldn't move. It was as though he'd stumbled into a giant cathedral, the vast hidden soul of Technos III. He couldn't seem to get his breath. He felt like a fly crawling over a stained glass window in some old, abandoned monastery. He finally allowed himself to be persuaded on, following Spectre Alice down a long series of steps into the misty depths below. All around him, the rejects were scattering into prearranged hiding places and ambush positions. Random slowly realized that to them this awesome place was nothing special. They didn't see the glory and the spectacle of such a natural wonder. They had no time for that. They saw it only as a good place to launch an ambush, as just another killing ground in their never-ending war. Spectre Alice led Random, Ruby, and Storm into a concealed depression in the cavern wall, giving a good view of the single entrance above. She made sure Storm was settled comfortably beside her, drew her disruptor, and then settled herself down to wait. The energy gun seemed very large in her small, bony hand. Thin wisps of yellow smoke drifted up from the floor below, smelling of brimstone. The rejects had melted into their hiding places like so many silent shadows, and now they waited patiently with gun in hand for their enemy to come to them. The great cavern was still and quiet. Random edged over so he could put his mouth next to Spectre Alice's ear. How long has this place been here?
Who knows? It's been here longer than us, that's for sure.
It's wonderful.
Damn right. Perfect place for an ambush. We can control everything that happens down here. The wolf's troops don't even know what they're walking into. Poor bastards. There will be blood and suffering and the slaughter of our enemy. Now shut up. They'll be here soon. You can play tourist later when we've killed them all.
The sound of approaching, running feet came from above, and Random crouched down, gun in hand. It wouldn't be the first time he turned a place of beauty and wonder into a battleground. He'd seen many wonders and marvels in his day on many planets, and left them littered with the dead and the dying. For all his noble cause, he sometimes thought that the only real legacy he'd leave behind him was a bloody trail of death and destruction.
And was against YouTube's pussy codes of whatever.
Bar, edge, and shoal, and there was no time left for introspection or regret. This was the killing time, the dance of the quick and the dead, and all in the name of the noble cause of rebellion. The great cavern blazed with light as both sides opened up with energy weapons. The brilliant beam spat in 100 directions, crisscrossing, ricocheting from the solid metal walls. There were screams and war cries and desperate orders as the faithful and the wolf mercenaries scurried for cover. Rage and the need for revenge had brought them this far, running recklessly through the dark in pursuit of a mocking enemy. But the deadly energy beam brought them to a sudden halt as they slammed into a wall. Men fell dead and dying, sometimes screaming, sometimes not, and bodies littered the narrow paths, burning quietly. The survivors found hiding places from which to return fire until the cavern finally fell silent as the energy weapons were exhausted. There was a pause, interrupted only by the moans of the wounded and the dying echoes. Then both sides drew their swords, emerged from their hiding places, and went out onto the misty cavern floor to meet each other. The rejects and their enemies slammed together, steel against steel, hand to hand. No quarter asked or given. This was a blood feud for the faithful and the mercenaries now. For the rejects, it always had been. The two sides pressed endlessly forward, breasting the yellow mist like a tide, with no place for caution or second thoughts. Swords clashed and blood flew, and the great floor of the chamber became a mass of struggling figures. Random and Ruby fought back to back as always, unbeatable and unstoppable. Storm fought doggedly behind them, swinging his sword with the steady, deliberate skill of many years' experience. Enemies swirled around the three of them, but could not bring them down. Ruby Journey killed and killed and laughed aloud, in her element at last. Random fought with a cold, focused precision, concerned only with ending the fighting as soon as possible. He fought for his cause and took no pleasure in the killing. We burned that out of him long ago. Storm struggled on, already gasping for breath, his sword seeming to grow heavier with every blow and parry. After all, he was only human. Finally, almost inevitably, the three most famous fighters of the Rebellion found themselves facing off with the three greatest fighters of the Empire forces, the Investigators Barr, Edge, and Shoal. The milling crowd seemed almost a part to bring them together, as though they were the microcosm by which the greater struggle would be decided. Edge faced off against Ruby, Barr against Random, Shoal against Storm. They paused with something like mutual respect, and then threw themselves at each other. Blades crashed and sprang apart, and then the greater crush of fighting bodies slowly separated the three couples and carried them away from each other. Random put his back against a metal stalactite and held his ground as Edge hammered at him with his sword. Random dodged the blows he could and parried those he couldn't, content to let the investigator tire himself out. Except that Edge didn't get tired. Instead, the investigator's strength seemed to increase with every blow as his fury grew with every failed attack. His mouth was stretched in a mirthless smile, and his eyes were dark and wild. Random ducked deep to avoid a double-handed swing, and Edge's blade sheared clean through the tip of the metal stalactite behind him. It came to Random that fighting defensively against an investigator was a good way to get yourself killed, maze improved or not. He boosted, feeling the blood hammer through his veins and thunder in his head, and launched himself at Edge, who fell back a step, startled, and then held his ground and would not be moved for all of Random's boosted strength and speed. He was, after all, an investigator, and even an aging investigator was a match for most things the universe could send against him. That was his job. But Random had been through the madness maze, and he wasn't like most things in the universe anymore. He smiled, very sanely, into Edge's crazy grin, and let his guard drop just a little. Edge's sword flew forward instantly to take advantage of the opening. And Random's free hand came up impossibly quickly, slapping the blade to one side. For an endless moment, they stood together, Edge wide open and knowing it. And then Random's sword slammed into Edge's chest and punched out his back. Edge let out a small bark of pain, blood spraying from his grimacing mouth. And then he sank to his knees as the strength went out of him. Random pulled his sword free, and Edge collapsed onto his face, as though only the sword had been holding him up. Random decapitated him anyway, just in case. Edge was an investigator, after all. Ruby boosted the moment she realized her opponent was an investigator. Barr might be the oldest of the three, but he was still far more dangerous than most men could ever be. so she dared him into a core-a-core, faces close together over crossed blades, and then she spat in his left eye. And in that split second, while he was distracted, she pulled a knife from her belt and stuck it between his ribs. She felt blood gush out of her hand before he pushed himself back and away from her. She launched a furious attack with all her boosted strength and speed behind it, and he backed away step by step. Blood poured down his side with every movement, but still he wouldn't give in to the dreadful wound in his side, parrying her every blow, his face calm and unmoved. In the end, Ruby had to use all her strength to beat aside his blade and all her speed to bring the edge of her sword flashing back across his exposed throat. Blood spurted, splashing her face. She stepped back, wiping it off her forehead so it wouldn't run down into her eyes. She smiled as she saw her cut had sliced half through his neck. And then the smile faded as she realized Barr was still standing. He was an investigator, and he was damned if he'd go down into the dark without taking his enemy with him. He threw himself at her, his sword swinging around in an unstoppable arc. Ruby dropped to one knee and ducked under it. Her head jerked slightly as Barr's blade cut off a chunk of her hair. She thrust her sword deep into Barr's belly. He grunted once and backed away, pulling himself off the transfixing blade. Ruby let go of her sword and surged up off her knee. She grabbed Barr's head between both her hands, forced him over backward, and slammed the back of his head down onto the jagged tip of a metal stalactite. It slammed through his head, and the point burst up out of his right eye. Barr convulsed, and then was finally still, the breath going out of him in a long, frustrated sigh. Ruby retrieved her sword, breathing hard, and then looked Barr over carefully from a safe distance, just in case. He had been an investigator after all. Satisfied that he really was dead at last, Ruby leaned over and kissed him on the bloody lips. The battle was pretty much over. The rebels had had the advantages of position and surprise, and a familiarity with the killing ground. For all their experience and their fury, the faithful and the wolf mercenaries never stood a chance. Most were dead. The few survivors had formed a defiant group around the one surviving investigator, Shoal. Ruby moved to stand beside Random, facing her. Neither of them mentioned Storm. Shoal looked from one to the other, her sword dripping blood, and then she grinned quickly, turned, and darted up an unguarded path and out of the cavern. The others scrambled after her, and the rejects let them go. Someone had to tell the wolves of the great rebel victory. The battle was over. The rejects moved among the wounded, dispassionately finishing off the enemy and doing what they could for their own kind. They had no place for prisoners in the underground, and the long journey to the Sisters of Mercy would kill them anyway. Random and Ruby put away their swords and went to look for Alexander Storm, a swordsman long past his best, last seen facing off against Investigator Shoal. They moved among the bodies, occasionally turning them over to study the blood-flecked faces, but he wasn't there. They eventually found him, hiding in a concealed hollow, well away from the main action. He wasn't hurt. He looked up at them, and in his face, there was only anger and resentment.
I ran. So would any sane man faced with an investigator. I'm not inhumanly fast and strong like you. I was no match for her, and we both knew it. So I turned and ran, and she let me go. She had more important things to do. After all, how dangerous could one old fool be?
You were doing fine until she came along. You were fighting just like you used to.
I was tired and hurting, and I couldn't get my breath. I can't fight like I used to anymore. I'm an old man past his prime, just like you used to be. Only you're not anymore, are you?
Alex.
I saw you fighting. No one's that fast or that strong. Not even the Jack Random of legend. I don't recognize you anymore, Jack. What are you? A fury? A hating man? An alien? Because I don't think you're human anymore.
I'm your friend. Just as I always have been.
No, you're not. You're looking younger all the time. No one can stand against you. Not even investigators. Whatever you are now, you have nothing in common with the likes of me anymore. Maybe you did die when the Empire had you after all. Or at least the Jack Random I used to know.
Storm pushed past them and walked away. Random started after him. Alex, please. I need you. Ruby stopped him with a hand on his arm.
Let him go. He's right. We're not the people we used to be. We're better. And you don't need him. You've got me.
Random looked at the bloody mask of her face for a long moment. Yes. I've got you.
Mother Beatrice of the Sisters of Mercy held the flap of the hospital tent open so that the stretcher bearers could bring in more wounded. There were many gravely injured after the unexpected rebel attack, and already the tent was full to overflowing. Beatrice and her people were doing all they could, knowing, as they did, that most of the time it wasn't going to be enough. After Toby's broadcast, drugs and plasma and medical supplies had come flooding in from the Sisterhood and other charities, as well as the reluctant wolves, but no more doctors or nurses. Technos 3 wasn't that important, and they were needed elsewhere. No one had foreseen a bloodbath like this. She'd never seen so many casualties from one battle. Normally they just died. Her new resources meant Beatrice could keep more of the wounded alive, but that meant a greater strain on her still limited space and supplies. Damn the rebels. Damn the wolves. And damn her for coming here, because she thought she could make a difference. She pushed her tiredness aside and went back into the tent. Back into hell. She made her way slowly down the length of the tent, stepping over bodies and patients, helping the doctors and the nurses where she could. Even if it only meant holding a patient's hand or placing a cool hand on a fevered brow. Sometimes she had to help hold a man down while the doctors operated. They were saving the anesthetics for those who wouldn't survive the shock of extended surgery. For quick in-and-out jobs, they usually just gave the poor bastard something to bite on, to muffle the screams as much as anything. She moved on, doing what she could, praying silently to her God for strength. And then she stopped, as it seemed to her she recognized a face. She knelt down beside the twitching, delirious man, and frowned thoughtfully. Half of his left arm was missing, severed above the elbow. He'd taken other sword hits, too. Beatrice bit her lip. Of course she knew the face. She'd seen it often enough in the factory complex. This wasn't a church soldier or a mercenary. This was a clone. And since the Empire didn't allow clones to use weapons, this had to be an escaped clone. Presumably a rebel from the recent assault. She shrugged and got to her feet. She was a Sister of Mercy, and all were welcome here, and to hell with what the wolf said. She beckoned to the nearest nurse.
This one's a rebel. Do we have any more?
32 so far. You did say...
Yes, I did. Keep their faces covered, with bandages if you have to. What the wolves don't know won't hurt them, and we don't need the complications. Any news on more supplies?
Most of it's still held up in orbit. Since the attack, the wolves are only allowing essential craft landing permission. Security, they say.
Bastards. I'll contact the Sisterhood again when I get a chance. See if they can put some pressure on.
What do we do with the rebels once they're well enough to be moved? Can't just leave them here. We need the space. But what's the point in healing them if we just have to hand them over to wolf security afterward?
Don't worry about it. The rebels will spirit them away as soon as they can safely be moved. They always do.
Beatrice looked back over her shoulder as raised voices came from the entrance to the tent. She saw who it was and scowled.
Here comes trouble. Get those faces covered now.
The nurse nodded quickly and turned away. Beatrice made her way back to the entrance as quickly as she could and blocked it with her body. She nodded for the flustered nurse to leave it to her, and the nurse nodded gratefully and left her to it. Beatrice smiled icily at the newcomer.
Cardinal Cassa, to what do we owe the pleasure of your company at this extremely busy time?
You've got rebel wounded in here. I've had reports. I want them handed over to my people for questioning. Now! They shouldn't be here anyway. I've got more hurt men coming in.
Something else gone wrong?
None of your business.
You're the one filling my tent with wounded. That makes it my business. And as a sister of mercy, I'll treat anyone who needs my help. That's my job.
Kasser smiled coldly.
Screw your job. Either you turn those rebel scum over to me now, or I'll have my men come in and drag them out.
Beatrice nodded calmly.
Always knew you were a bit of a bastard, James. But don't let your anger over losing a battle push you into doing something you'll regret. The Sisterhood still has a lot of pull with the Church back on Golgotha. And right now, I'm the Sisterhood's favorite daughter. I'm doing great things for their image. You mess with me, and my superiors will have your superiors come down on you like a ton of bricks in a windshaft.
We're a long way from Golgotha, Beatrice. By the time you can get word out, it'll all be over. Your precious rebels have information I need, and I'm going to squeeze it out of them, drop by drop. They'll suffer, as my men have suffered. And there's not a damn thing you can do to stop me.
Wrong. Look down, Cardinal.
They both looked down, and there was Beatrice's hand, holding a scalpel pressed lightly against Kasser's groin. They both stood very still.
You wouldn't dare.
Try me. As you said, we're a long way from Golgotha. Accidents happen. You don't give a damn about your men being hurt. You're just desperate to salvage some small success from this unholy mess, so your precious career doesn't go down the toilet. Well, this is my territory, James, and we do things my way here. You try and walk over me, and I swear I'll geld you right here and now.
Kasser looked into her steady eyes and believed her.
I'll be back. With armed men.
No, you won't. I've got a hidden camera recording this. You really want your men to see you backed down by a mere sister of mercy? That would really kill your promotion chances. Now get out of here. I'm sick of looking at you.
Kasser nodded jerkily and stepped carefully backward.
I won't forget this, bitch!
That's the idea. Now piss off. I have work to do.
Kasser turned and strode away, his stiff back radiating helpless rage. God help the first person he ran into back at the complex. Beatrice watched him go, hefting the scalpel thoughtfully. There wasn't actually any hidden camera, but Kasser wouldn't believe that. It was the sort of thing he'd do, after all. She'd do well to keep a watchful eye on the Cardinal after this. He was a spiteful man, and he never forgot an insult. Beatrice couldn't find it in herself to care. She had more important things to concern her. She turned around as one of the doctors called her name urgently and trudged back through the blood and death to see what she could do to help. Cardinal James Kasser was still fuming when he joined half a man in his quarters for their prearranged meeting. He'd fix the bitch, though maybe not personally. And not until he'd got the tape. Wouldn't do for anyone else to find out how she'd humiliated him. He nodded curtly to half a man, who was standing at parade rest beside a bed Kasser suspected he never used anyway. It was hard to think of half a man doing something as human and vulnerable as sleeping. The spitting energy field that made up the right half of the man's body was openly disturbing when seen up close. It seemed to be no color and every color all at once. And if you looked at it too long, it swallowed up your gaze till you were lost in it. Kasser kept his gaze fixed on what was left of half a man's face, though even that didn't seem very human anymore.
Let's get to the point. I need to debrief what's left of my men after today's debacle. You have instructions from my superiors on how to deal with the wolves?
Very simple instructions.
When half a man opened his mouth to speak, Kasser could see energy seething within it. He made himself concentrate on what half a man was saying.
You're to plant explosives I brought with me in certain delicate parts of the factory. I have a map that will show you the exact positions. The explosions will do just enough damage to slow down star drive production without actually putting it in jeopardy. The purpose is to make the wolves look incompetent. The Church will then be in a strong position to take over control of star drive production in the best interest of the Empire. Apparently your superiors feel the need for rather more influence at court.
Easy enough to arrange. I know just the man for the job. Very discreet, and if need be, completely expendable. You supply the map and the explosives, and I'll take care of the details. No one will notice anything until the bombs go off.
He stopped and studied half a man thoughtfully for a moment.
You've never struck me as particularly religious before. Why risk your much-vaunted impartiality to smuggle in explosives for the church? What are you getting out of this?
Something I want very badly. Nothing you need to know about.
Well, I want something, too. Mother Superior Beatrice of the Sisters of Mercy. She's running a field hospital here. I want her killed. Horribly. You arrange that for me, and I'll keep quiet about what I know.
I could kill you right now.
You can't make this work without me. You don't have the contacts. Only my men have unsupervised access to the kinds of places the bombs will have to go. Anyone else and the Wolf security people will start asking awkward questions. You need me.
The quality of people entering the church has gone right down the drain in recent years. Very well. I'm empowered to be flexible to get the job done. I'll see that Beatrice meets an unpleasant end.
I'll tell you when. I need to check if a certain tape exists first.
Very well. But, Cassa, don't ever try to pressure me again. I have a very short and unpleasant way with people who annoy me. You'll find the map on my writing table, along with instructions on where to find the explosives. They're to be timed to go off during the Wolf ceremony to celebrate Star Drive production finally going online. Shrek and his fellow news reptiles will be there to capture it all for posterity.
Good. I've got a little surprise of my own planned for Toby Shrek. He won't just be recording the news. He's going to be part of it.
Daniel and Stephanie Wolf were arguing again, though at least they had the sense to do it somewhere private for once. Stephanie paced back and forth in the private family reception hall, throwing words like knives at her brother, who stood sulking by the built-in bar, glaring down into his drink. Michael and Lily stood together a respectful distance away, large drinks in their hands, being ignored by their spouses, as usual.
"I still think we shouldn't be discussing this in front of them," Daniel said finally, gesturing with his drink at Michael and Lily.
"They won't talk. What's good for us is good for them, and they know it. And it's important they know what we're planning, so they won't say or do the wrong thing through ignorance. Besides, they know what would happen to them if they talked, don't you, darlings? Of course you do. Now pay attention, Daniel. We have to go through with this. That rebel attack during a live holo-transmission made us look very bad. Us as well as Valentine. It's a dangerous setback to our plans, and we're running out of time. We have to come up with something that will make us look good and Valentine appear utterly incompetent before Star Drive production actually starts. Once it's up and running, Valentine will be the Empress's favorite blue-eyed boy, and it will take a miracle to dislodge him."
"Agreed. But I still don't want us discussing this in front of witnesses. I can trust you not to speak, whatever the pressures, but I can't say the same about our dear spouses. We might be married to them, but it doesn't make them family."
"Oh, all right. We'll discuss this further in my private quarters. Michael, Lily, stay here till we send for you. You don't need to know the details anyway. Just do as you're told. And try not to drain the bar dry for a change.